top secret. For senior officer. Immediate. Decipher and pass to all relevant sections. 31st of July. Intelligence Insight. Number 013.
Welcome to this Bletchley Park Intelligence Insight. As COVID-19 struck, we decided to start releasing these extra episodes to give you, our listeners, something extra while you were in lockdown. I'm glad we could share so many previously unheard recordings that we just hadn't been able to before, and hopefully these shows have helped you through these extraordinary times, if even only in a small way. Now, over the next few episodes, we'll start to return to our more normal podcast, and eventually our It Happened Here shows too. So, 18 weeks after we first started them, it seems only fitting that as our last intelligence insight, we look at how Bletchley Park has finally managed to reopen to the public. It's been a long journey, which is still not over, but who better to hear from than some of our paid and volunteer staff who've made it happen. So who better to start this special episode than our CEO, Ian Standen. Ian, good to see you after all these weeks.
Good morning. Yes, it's odd, really, having not been on site for many months. We're back here and see the place open, but it's great to be reopened again.
A little bit strange because obviously we're having to enforce social distancing to do this recording. So we're both with radio mics on. But before lockdown even, did you expect this?
Well, clearly, as the crisis started to grow in February, March of this year, we were watching it very closely. And there were a number of sites that closed down before us, but in line with the government direction, we closed on the 19th of March, very swiftly sent people home. Really pleased that the government introduced a furlough scheme, which allowed us to send most of the staff home. We ended up with about 85% of the staff on furlough, and the rest of the staff who were left behind were just trying to sort it all out, make sure that we closed down the park in a safe manner, and then prepared for what came later. As the crisis developed, we looked at the possibility of reopening, and as soon as we got some direction from government, we started the planning. And as all these things, it's much easier to close down a place than to reopen it. So we spent about 6 to 8 weeks planning the reopening, monitoring the situation, monitoring the safety measures we'd have to have in place. And we, of course, were lucky that shops had opened prior to museums and what have you, so we were able to draw some experience from that. But yes, we spent a lot of time with a very small team who are still working planning the reopening.
And there are a lot of changes. You know, we should be upfront with people. It's not exactly the same visitor experience at the moment. For example, we've just walked along a one-way system.
Indeed. I mean, we had to follow the guidance. The guidance is very clear about the sort of things you need to have in place. So we now have a whole raft of interventions that make the visitor experience as safe as we possibly can. We were hugely lucky that, along with a number of other heritage sites, we were able to get some money from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, which helped us fund things like, as you would have seen, some new toilets, perspex screens, masks for staff, one-way signs, social distancing signs, a whole raft of other sort of visible interventions, but also to upgrade our website because, of course, you have to pre-book when you come here. So that's very important. I think we're just near the point of where you actually book on the day as well online, so that we know who's coming, we know how many numbers there are, and so we can make sure that we have the right number of staff and all the necessary processes in place so that people will have, right from the very start of their journey in Bletchley Park, a safe experience. As you said, there's also one-way systems round, both round the outside areas, of which we have lots, which is again very helpful in terms of being able to open early, particularly when people, I suspect, were reluctant to go into confined spaces. We, of course, as you know, have lots of open space
here. That's one thing we've got as a plus for us that a lot of sites don't have, isn't it? It's we've got all this open space.
Indeed. And as for those people who are listening to this podcast and know the site, you come through the visitor centre, which we've very carefully orchestrated. And with the booking system, we know how many people are coming through there on an hourly basis. But of course, once you get outside the visitor centre, You can walk around the site, and by the time you get up to some of the exhibitions like Hut 11A or to the huts, then the visitors will have dispersed, and actually there's not many queues outside the buildings at the moment.
Bletchley Station! Bletchley Station!
Hello, my name's Harold Liberty, and I'm a volunteer steward here at Bletchley Park. I also serve, when I'm able to, as a guide, and I work with the learning team, taking groups of children and students around the site.
This isn't the first time you've been on the podcast. We did a special with you about the history of the drama group that you'd written up, which was absolutely fantastic, the study you did. But it's the first for interviewing you at such a long distance away, because obviously we're having to use social distancing to record this. So you're now back at Bletchley Park.
Yes.
How does it feel to be back here?
It's slightly unusual. I have a mask between you and me. Fortunately, it's a transparent one, which means I can see you. Unfortunately, it's a transparent one, which means you can see me.
Was it great to come back?
Almost without exception, yes. It's very frustrating when you've got a story to tell and you're passionate about that story and about the place that generates it, and yet you can do nothing about it. But you still want to be able to tell the story.
That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, with most of our paid staff and volunteers, this isn't just a job or something to do to fill in the time. This is a passion for them.
Oh, very much so. And I can certainly sympathise with the frustration of those who want to come back but are unable to do so because they're more vulnerable, they're needing to shield, they're greater age even than I am. So it's more difficult for them. We're looking forward to some of them returning, hopefully over the next few weeks.
And how did you handle lockdown? Did you find that difficult?
For myself, no, fortunately. One government minister kindly said, it'll be a good way of having your daily exercise if you do your gardening and allotment. So my allotment has never had such kind treatment as it's had over the lockdown, and now the vegetables are thoroughly on the stream. So I've been pretty active in that respect, and I've also been able to continue to do some reading up over one or two specialist areas. As you mentioned earlier, I had been looking into the history of the drama group. I've taken a bit of time to look at the background to music at Bletchley Park.
So hopefully we might be able to get you back in and have another episode where you tell us all about the music that happened here then.
It's not impossible. I must say that when I first came back, I was impressed with the way in which things had been organised by the management. They clearly planned, they clearly thought out a lot of what needed to be done in terms of the layout of the different areas, in terms of provision for safety, for hygiene, and all of that kind of thing. I have actually read the risk assessment, and they've taken a great deal of care about that. Even to the simple things like providing some extra sheltered space like the one we're standing under as we do this recording. And the signage around is clear and the language they've used is very positive. So for customers coming in and looking around the site, they're not faced with lots of don't do this, don't do that. It's very positive and it's encouraging to the atmosphere around the park. People don't feel as if they're being hassled, but they're being encouraged and gently guided. So I was impressed with that. I've also been impressed with the temporary staff that have come in to help. Without them, certainly, it would have been difficult to manage simply because of the numbers of people. We've got a number of young people, students, some university students helping in this respect, and they've been interested, they've been helpful, they've been intrigued by the story and the background. They've been very willing in what they've been doing. They've been very personable. And the ones that I've spoken with have been entirely positive about their experience too. And I think that too has helped the visitors as they've come onto the site. They've had a good experience from them. And this has all led to a very pleasant atmosphere around in the park. On the days that I have been in here, numbers have been increasing. It's been relaxed and pleasant. It's been feeling, I was going to say, like the old days, like, to an extent like the days before lockdown, not as crowded, but a genuinely good experience in terms of the atmosphere around the park. And we're able to find different ways to tell the story. If people are waiting in a queue for a minute or two, it's a chance to explain a bit more about what's going on before they go into this area or that area. So we can fulfill our passion of putting over the history of it. We can find different ways to do it. And that's encouraging too.
Yeah, that's what we're all here for. Our only real point of being here is so we can tell the story of those men and women who served here during World War II and the astonishing work they did. And the fact that we're open again, we can do that again, is fantastic, isn't it?
Yes. The story hasn't changed, the importance of it hasn't changed, and it's vital that that story keeps being put out and that people have the opportunity to come to see.
Now, earlier you said about numbers, and I think this is quite important. This is something we really need people to realise, because how much of our operating costs are covered by visitors?
I mean, from the economics, yeah, this is still much a crisis, and we are reopen. At the moment, in the first month of reopening, we're about 25% of our last year's visitor number for this month.
And bearing in mind that 95%, is it?
Correct, 95% income comes from visitors. So, you know, we're in a very precarious situation.
Because I think people will automatically see somewhere's open and think, right, they're through the worst of it. But it's still a long journey we've got to go through, isn't it?
Indeed. And we are, again, like many other heritage attractions and museums, in a position where we've got to start building those numbers up within the capacity that we can actually accommodate on site. To put it in simple terms, at the moment, our maximum capacity is about 50% of what we did in July and August last year. So it's a challenge. So you may have seen probably a week ago, the government announced a £1.57 billion package of support to this sector, which is very welcome. We're yet to understand exactly what the detail of that is, but we're hoping that we will be able to tap into that and have some operational money that will help us through this crisis. But the hope is that the restrictions start to ease over the course of the next weeks and months. We can get more people on site. But in the meantime, I encourage anybody to come and visit and to allow us to continue to build up the business and provide the income that allows the place to be sustained for the future.
On a more wider point, has the museum and heritage community joined together to help each other on this?
Yeah, I mean, as always, I mean, I've said right from the moment I arrived here sort of over 8 years ago that it's such a collegiate sharing community. You can pick up a phone to a peer and say, what are you doing about this, that and the other? So having been at the forefront of this reopening, we've been sharing our, you know, risk assessments and our method statements and all the various other things you have to do to satisfy the health and safety requirements with other people. It's stuff that we've worked through. We've got to a situation that works. So why wouldn't we share it with some of our peers to help them get back on the ladder to recovery? And I think we've made the right decision to open early. We've learnt some lessons with low numbers. We're now starting to build up. Every week it's building, you know, on the last week. Again, all credit to my team. They did a great job. And actually, we haven't found anything glaringly wrong. There's tweaks always that you can do better and things that you learn. And it seems that the visitors, certainly from the feedback we've had, you know, some great TripAdvisor reports, that we are creating an environment in which the public are comfortable, happy, without compromising the basic essence of the Bletchley Park visit. I think the CEO of ALVA, the Associated Leading Visitor Attractions, captured it very well when he spoke about a month ago. And he said, you know, what you need is a sanitised site, but not a sanitised visitor experience. And I think we're at the moment absolutely spot on that. As you go around, you said you were seeing hand sanitizer points, lots of cleaning going on. But actually, if you stand here, as we are looking across the croquet lawn to the mansion, actually, there's very little that interrupts what was a vista that many people want to take on their camera previously. And that's a measure of how we've managed to balance out those interventions without spoiling people's visit.
Hello, my name is Dawn Barlow. I'm head of operations here at Bletchley Park.
Dawn, what's it like to finally be back at work and back at Bletchley Park?
Well, it's really exciting to see the visitors come back and the park come to life, especially this time of year. Everything's so beautiful, and we have a gorgeous outdoor space. It's just wonderful to see the children playing and the families enjoying it. Gives a real sense of the magic, I suppose, of this place.
It hasn't been an easy journey back, has it? It's been a lot of hard work, and I guess your teams have really been at the front of that.
It's been a collaborative effort over a number of months to prepare the park, to reopen, to welcome our guests in a safe environment. But the team has really stepped up and done a fantastic job with that. And, you know, everyone's played an important role in ensuring the safety of our visitors, making sure the visitor experience is as wonderful as it ever has been. the past few months. It's been strange, but it's been wonderful to see the team come together and how everyone has been able to play a part in that.
During the lockdown, were you working from home?
Yes, I worked from home. Found myself doing things that I don't normally do on a daily basis to cover for my colleagues who were furloughed, and putting together the plans for reopening the park without the benefit of their expertise, I suppose, doing what they do day in and day out, putting those plans together, knowing that once they were able to come back, that we'd be able to sit down and go through all of those different processes to make sure that we were capturing everything in the right way and being able to execute all of the plans and the safety measures and all of those things.
If we go back a couple of weeks, were you there to watch the first visitor come in?
Yes, absolutely.
What was it like?
It was very exciting. In the couple of days leading up to that, we had volunteers and staff in hanging bunting all around the visitor center and the park, getting it ready to welcome them. And to see how keen the visitors were to return was really heartwarming, because I was in constant communication with them covering the email system for the museum. And so, you know, having people pleading with me, are you open yet? When will you be open? We can't wait to come back. That really helped push me through the close period and was really exciting. And oftentimes I would share those with colleagues. So it really bolstered our morale. I'm just so honored to have the position that I do here at Bletchley Park and to be able to lead the people that I do lead. We have an amazing, amazing staff here and our whole core of volunteers, second to none, fantastic people. And I'm in awe of everyone's enthusiasm and energy and just so excited to share this amazing place with our visitors again. So I can't wait to see more of them.
I think your American get up and go gives us a bit of a kick sometimes that us Brits we probably need, I think.
I do try. Well, I was definitely anxious to get the park open and to get the ball rolling again, since coincidentally our opening day to the public was on the 4th of July.
Of course.
That was particularly poignant for me, given the special relationship started here at Bletchley Park. So I was very excited and very, very convinced that it was going to be that day as we were going through all of the planning. I'd asked for a chili cheese dog cart on opening day, but we were so busy with visitors that that didn't come to fruition. But one day I will get it. I will get it.
Bletchley Park relies on both its paid and its volunteer staff, and I think they've really shown the Bletchley Park spirit, haven't they?
Definitely, and through trying circumstances. As I said earlier, you know, we closed down, we sent everybody home, we were able to put a large number of the staff onto the furlough system, which has been an invaluable tool to stop us having to spend money while we were closed. Those staff who were working managed to turn things around, get the park closed down and then reopened. We brought a few people off furlough to start the reopening and more as we opened. It's worth saying we've still got 50 odd staff on furlough at the moment, which again is invaluable support. And then our volunteers, as always, vital to have them as part of the team. The way the virus has spread and the vulnerable categories has meant many of our volunteers haven't been able to come in.
No.
But those that have come in have, as always, put their backs to the wheel and helped us move along, particularly our landscape volunteers.
Yeah, because what did this place look like after a few weeks?
It was like a jungle. I mean, it's amazing. And yeah, we shouldn't be surprised, but it's amazing after a few months how the grass grows to sort of waist height. Of course, the time of year as well. The bushes are all growing like mad. And as I said, it did look a bit like a jungle here, but actually a very small team, including some very dedicated volunteers, got in here amongst it. And looking around now, you wouldn't know that
it looks no different
that a month
to normal,
ago it was looking like a jungle. So yeah, great effort all around, great team effort. And then of course, as we started to get to near the visitor opening, all the placing of the interventions, putting up the Perspex screens, the sanitizer pods, the signage, etc., etc. So yeah, a great team effort to bring it into operation.
My name's Dave Perry. I've been here roughly 6 years, and I'm actually a volunteer steward and steward mentor.
What's it like finally being back?
Absolutely brilliant. Missed it for 3 months, This is my relaxed time from my full-time job because I work 5 days a week normally. So I'm here Saturdays and Sundays, open till close, and I love it.
You missed the place, didn't you?
Yeah, I love it. Missed the place completely.
Did you find lockdown difficult?
Lockdown, not so much, because I worked right the way through it. Because I wasn't here, then I just got extra hours at work. So now I've been told to take 2 months off from a day job. So I'm now here 4 days a week instead of two.
What is it you love about Bletchley Park?
I have a lot of connections with the security services. So this is a basic interest to me. It's where it all started.
Bit of a busman's holiday.
Basically, yeah. But I use this as a relaxed time. This is my downtime.
And you're helping to tell the story of what happened here during the war, aren't you? What about, you know, the social distancing and things like that, how they've affected you coming back?
The social distancing is fine. I mean, I've got so used to it from work, because I work in central London all the while.
Right.
Most people, we get no complaints. People agree with the social distancing, the queues are fine. I mean, since we've reopened, I've heard no complaints whatsoever. I mean, it's all open air, but even if you go into the buildings, there's no complaints at all. People are quite happy to wait. You ask them to wait. We have no problems with that at all.
You've actually taken the decision yourself, because you've got this time off from your full-time job that you normally do, to actually spend more of that free time here.
Because I worked right the way through the furlough period, they decided they owed me so much. So they said, take 2 months off and come back again. So I thought, I'm not going to sit around at home every day of the week and do nothing. So I thought, they're short here. So an extra couple of days a week, not a problem. Come in, do an extra couple of days.
That speaks so much to our volunteers here, because without our volunteers, I mean, we just couldn't operate. You know, it's the passion that you all have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that goes with all of the volunteers.
Yeah. Have you worked with any of the temporary staff we've had to get in?
Yeah, I've worked with most of the temporary staff. I mean, they've been absolutely brilliant. They come in, they ask questions if they don't know the answers. We're quite happy to work with them and give them the answers. But they've been absolutely brilliant.
And they're young people as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all young people, and all of them are actually eager to know the story.
We're maybe training up our next group of stewards and guides, maybe.
I've actually said to a few of them, if they finish their temporary work, apply for volunteer.
Brilliant. Well, good luck, and thanks for coming back.
Okay, you're welcome, and I'll still be here in a few years' time.
I think we've done sufficient to keep Bletchley Park in the public eye. The comms team have done great work in terms of putting up videos, keeping the social media going. But the issue really for me is Bletchley Park is one of those places about place. It's about coming to it. And whilst we can put up a certain amount out there, nothing beats coming and standing here. And of course, when you're in a lockdown, you have to do a certain amount of that, but it's not a substitute. And yes, in the background, we're always putting stuff out there on the internet, on our social media platforms and what have you, as a taster for people. But what we really need is people to come back here and stand here. There's nothing beats it. The example I use to all sorts of people when they ask me about this is, if you Google the Mona Lisa, you probably get about 100,000 hits, 100,000 copies of the Mona Lisa online. But actually, you still go to the Louvre and it's 10 people deep in front of the Mona Lisa because people are going to see it. Well, we're exactly the same. And we cling to being a place that is about the experience of standing here, coming in, standing in the footprints of those great people who went before and the work they did, and understanding what it's like. And on a day like today, with the sun beating on your back, you know, standing out here on the croquet lawn, it's lovely. People wandering around, getting the experience, and then popping into the huts, into the exhibitions, understanding the story, and nothing beats actually coming and seeing it all gel together. And we are a story that's about this site. You know, it's about going from the mansion that's standing in front of us at the start of the war to those brick and steel buildings across the lake there, and how this place grew, tucked away in this corner of Buckinghamshire, and became this industrial co-breaking factory. And without coming here and seeing that and seeing the juxtaposition of the buildings in the parkland it's in, you don't understand the story in the same way as you do reading some great history books. But actually, it's about coming here and seeing it in 3D. It's a place that has that sort of hairs on the back of your neck feeling when you walk into this place. You say Gordon Welsham's office, Alan Turing's office, Denison's office, or even just walking into Hut 11 and sort of hearing the click of a bomb machine, you know, starting up. You know, to my mind, it could be summed up no better than the last line of our introductory film in the Visitor Centre, which says, Bletchley Park, it happened here. And that is the point of coming here, because this is a place it all happened, and that's why you need to come here and feel it and live it.
I'm Erica Munro, and I'm the Exhibitions Manager.
Erica, I don't think we can have a better sign of us reopening than opening a new exhibition, really, can we?
And we have one that's just opened in Hut 12.
It's like we'd planned this, isn't it? And quite frankly, we had, hadn't we? Because what's the background to this?
We had started preparing this exhibition. It's been in the making for quite some time. And then we were nearly ready to open it. We'd started actually installing the exhibition. And obviously lockdown happened and we had to close the site. So the opening date had to be moved. But because we'd done so much preparation work beforehand, we were able to coordinate it with the date that we reopened Bletchley Park on the 4th of July. So this new exhibition coincided with that, and it will run for 7 months until the 2nd of February.
We even had an episode scheduled for the podcast, the VIP opening and everything, and that all got put to one side. But we're going to pick this back up next month. So we're going to kind of do that opening episode, but we're going to look more in detail at the exhibition. It's called Never Alone. Give us a bit of an overview of what it's about.
The exhibition is based on one that was produced by the Science Museum and opened last year in Bradford at the National Science and Media Museum, also called Never Alone. We have licensed the sort of core of the exhibition and the design, but we've added a distinctly Bletchley angle to it. The main thrust of the exhibition is Never Alone, what happens when we're all connected. So it's about smart devices, Wi-Fi enabled devices, the connected world, the Internet of Things, and the pros and the cons of that. And it's not a preachy exhibition. We don't tell you how marvellous it is, and we don't tell you how frightening it can be. We sort of set questions to help you kind of make up your own mind. Mm. And quite often we've found that lots of people can actually have multiple opinions on the benefits and the disadvantages of Wi-Fi connected and smart devices. The exhibition itself, though, as I say, brings in a few Bletchley elements as well. You can see why, the very base of it, why we'd have an exhibition about smart devices, with Bletchley being one of the birthplaces of modern computing.
Yeah, and the whole raison d'etre of Bletchley during the war was to listen in on the enemy, wasn't it? So
well,
the surveillance side of it.
Exactly. And whilst we could go and say it's about technology, this is not so much about that. We look at the surveillance angle and also tracking. So modern day tracking devices, which sounds quite sinister, but we all, you know, we wear a Fitbit, we track our diet on our mobile phone and so on. And we look at the Bletchley angle of that, being able to not only, as you say, listen in to what the enemy was doing, but then logging it both in real time and in retrospect as well, and the kind of intelligence picture that that can produce, and how that functioned at Bletchley Park.
Well, yeah, that was Block C in a nutshell, wasn't it?
Not only Block C, but also, as you said, the surveillance angle with the Y service, listening in terms of non-encrypted speech, but also code, cipher of various types, delivered through Morse, delivered through electronic means. But then the indexes, the huge number of card indexes all around the site. Different departments had different indexes. And as we know, there were plenty of people doing administrative work, which is the very bland term used, but card indexes were vital in order to create that sort of memory bank, which could then be used to cross-reference new information. So that kind of granular level of being able to follow and remember what the enemy is doing, thinking, talking about, their movements and so on, that informed a lot of the growing intelligence that was produced at Bletchley Park. And that's what we've been able to pick out in this exhibition.
Well, that card index really, in a way, is just a paper version of a database, wasn't it?
Whether it's punch cards or whether it's actual people writing, handwriting as well, not so much with the typing, there's a lot of handwriting, a lot of ink used on card indexes. And a lot haven't survived, but an incredible number have. I mean, we are blessed with thousands of index cards that have survived, and we have a very, very small percentage of them on display in the exhibition.
Yes, I've been in and just had a look, and I did see there was some rather famous names on some of those.
There are. Hopefully, I'll look forward to giving you a bit more of the background of that in the next podcast. I don't want to give too much away, but certainly there are some lovely wartime objects on display, interestingly placed alongside modern Wi-Fi connected devices. So some quite unexpected juxtapositions, let's say.
Yes. Like you say, it's the perfect combination, isn't it? We've got the Bletchley story, but we've also got the modern day story. Now, you've had to put the rest of this together while you weren't here, kind of, haven't you? How difficult has that been?
Partly because we had prepared so much, and partly because we were blessed that this particular exhibition is an intellectual touring exhibition from the Science Museum. Yeah. So a lot of the work had already been prepared. The objects were already agreed, the loans and so on, everything had already been delivered. the printing had already taken place and been delivered, even though it hadn't actually been placed on the walls. And a lot of the experts involved in providing us with information, reviewing the work, the historical advisory group, which advises on every exhibition that Bletchley Park does, had already had a good look at the material. And we'd already discussed with various organizations about not only what we were presenting in the panels, but also, you know, things around it, for example, an events program and learning programs and all that sort of thing that have had to change slightly now in format. But we had done all of that preparatory work. So luckily with this exhibition, it was simply a case of coming in and making it look marvellous.
As the exhibitions manager, to be able to reopen on the 4th of July, as we did, to reopen with a new exhibition, how good did that feel?
I love this place. I think you can probably tell from the various podcast interviews and all of that I do. I'm absolutely passionate about this place. And seeing it reopen gradually with a smaller number of visitors, and it's growing and growing, and we're standing outside Hut 12 right now and we're looking out and we can see visitors enjoying the sunshine. That is just very hard to put into words how wonderful it feels that this story is being shared more and more, and that people are coming here. Everybody's weighing up the risks of coming here. Obviously, we have a lot in place to make it a safe visit, but people are making the choice to make that journey here and to come and learn about Bletchley Park. And I'm finding it quite hard to articulate how grateful I am for people to come and visit, for people to try and find out more, for people to have that desire to learn about what took place specifically here, but also how wonderful it is to see the place populated again. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's my first day out of the house in public in 130 days, and so it had to be here. Well, it's lovely to have you back on the podcast. You've been greatly missed, because I have to write the scripts for the copy, and it's not something I enjoy doing. But hopefully, very soon, we'll be able to restart our It Happened Here series, and people will be able to hear you more.
I do hope so. I'm looking forward to it. It's a gradual process. And it's inevitably a slow process getting back to or getting towards something that looks like it was before. But I really very much look forward to getting back into the swing of things.
Thanks, Erica.
So I guess my message for everybody listening to this podcast is, as the Visit England slogan says, we're good to go. We've got everything in place. We're making sure you're socially distanced. We've got all the right interventions so that your visit can be safe. But underpinning that, we're still the same old Bletchley Park with the great story to tell in the place it happened. My team are here, as always, to provide you a friendly welcome. So please do come back as soon as you feel comfortable. It'll be the same old place that you remember before, just with a few little tweaks to make it as safe as it can for your visit.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes.